Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Did you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, Rupert Grint. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Okay, everybody listening, beware. The following will be full of spoilers for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. If you have not read the book, back slowly away. Away, hands in the air, go to your nearest bookstore and pick up Deathly Hallows. Okay, welcome. It's Pottercast 113.
Wow.
This is our first post-VH call-out show. Can you believe it? The last time we did these in separate rooms, we were like Pottercast 90.
I know. We just did like 20-some shows. Boom, 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 boom.
And it's not over yet. We got plenty coming. We're going to talk to all of you about your Deathly Hallows predictions. Our hair is still blown back.
Oh, yeah.
From the book. What about you guys?
Oh my gosh, I know. Well, this is a call-in show, or call-out show.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go back to regularly formatted podcast, Come After Prophecy. But we just have to keep our ears out to you guys right now and figure out what you all thought about this darn thing, because it's just so much to talk about.
Before we do anything else, it's time to hear from our lovely friends at the Borders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Borders. Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet? Don't worry, Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy of this summer smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide from the spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BordersMedia.com or click on the Borders banner at the top of the Pottercast page to find out more.
All right.
Awesome.
And I think that since we are now back to our sort of regularly scheduled podcast, before we go start calling people, it's time to hear from Sue's
news. Oh my gosh, Sue, how about some crazy news?
Well, there's certainly been a great deal of news, and the most dramatic of all is that Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows is now available. The book, which was released at midnight last Friday, sold a whopping 8.3 million copies alone here in the United States in the first 24 hours, averaging 300,000 copies in sales per hour. That's more than 5,000 a minute. In Great Britain, Bloomsbury reported 2.65 million copies of the book sold at the initial release, equaling one in every 10 homes in the UK had a copy of the final installment in the Harry Potter series. Wow. Speaking of Harry, his author, J.K. Rowling, has appeared in several new interviews since the release of The Deathly Hallows, including a lengthy one found in the USA Today newspaper and in a two-part video interview broadcast on NBC's The Today Show. In these interviews, Jo discusses in detail her thoughts and feelings about writing the book, as well as answering some detailed questions, calling it, quote, just really liberating, end quote, finishing the book. Jo also made some huge revelations, and don't worry, there's no spoilers here. Jo said things such as the name of the character that was given the reprieve, and the two who were originally set to live then had their fates sealed in Deathly Hallows. Jo gave more details on the future jobs and occupations and the like of certain characters from the series, and Jo also revealed what the original final sentence of the series was to be, ending in the word Scar. Fans will remember that she announced shortly before the release of Deathly Hallows that this was no longer the case, but after many years of endless speculation of what this sentence might have actually been, you can now hear Jo saying this in a video clip you can find in our video gallery. It's very cool. The biggest news of all from this interview was revealed probably on the Today Show when Jo said that, yes, she will probably write a Hogwarts encyclopedia, saying, quote, I'm dealing with a level of obsession in some of my fans that will not rest until they know the middle names of Harry's great-great-grandparents. I love it. I'm all for that, end quote. In addition to an encyclopedia, which Jo says she is not writing anytime soon, she is, however, writing two other books, one that is described as something for children, the other not for children. In an interview with the USA Today newspaper, Jo gave the following response to the question asking if the beloved series will stand the test of time, with Jo saying, quote, when all the hype and everything else dies down, they will have to float or sink on their own merits, won't they? So in 50 years' time, if people are still reading them, they deserve to be read. And if they're not, then that's okay. End quote. Finally, it was revealed from the film trio of Dan, Rupert, and Emma they were given some serious insights into the fate of their characters, with Joe saying, quote, I told all three of them more than they ever let on, end quote. In a new interview with Entertainment Weekly, actor Dan Radcliffe describes in detail how he read Deathly Hallows, and he gives us feelings on the fate of Harry Potter and much more, and you can find the links to read that great interview on our website. Well, as there have been a plethora of new information coming directly from Joe, we will be playing a collection of audio clips from Joe here shortly in the program, so you can hear in her own voice some of the great thoughts she's expressed at this special time. Just terrific stuff, so stay tuned. Please note, we at Leaky are continuing our spoiler policy, and all news posted on our website will continue to contain spoiler warnings if needed before you click onto a link in a news story. And with that, let's get back to the show and those clips from Joe.
So Joe's been doing a heck of a lot of interviews lately, you guys. I don't know if you've seen all of them, but they're mostly in our video galleries, aren't they?
All in our video galleries.
We have her, we have the reading from the Midnight thing, we have her interviews, the amazing interviews she did on the Today Show, which is just really quite a lot.
Well, she let go of so many details. She let go of so many more details that probably could have been in some kind of other parallel dimension epilogue for Deathly Hallows, but
right.
It's cool that it's finally coming in. Should we play it to you for these guys? I don't know if we've all heard of them yet. Why don't I play it to you?
At the moment, it feels great, to be honest with you. It feels, this is a really nice place to be. I mean, I am sad. I was hard to live with for about a week after I finished this. It was this amazing cathartic moment, the end of 17 years' work. And it very much ties into things that I've done in my life for 17 years, so it brought back a lot of memories. Definitely the passage that I found hardest to write of all in all seven books, and the one that made me cry the most, was chapter 34 in this book. It's when Harry sets off into the forest. You know, I had this enormous explosion of emotion, and I cried and cried and cried. Particularly the last third of the book is as I always planned it. It really is. The only exception would be that one character appears in that last third, and I thought that character was going to die in book five when I started writing. So someone's Mr. Weasley. He was the person who got a reprieve. It would have been humanly impossible to answer every single question that fans have. Because I'm dealing with a level of obsession in some of my fans that will not rest until they know the middle names of Harry's great-great-grandparents. Well, you people have gotten a little obsessive. No, I love it. I'm all for that. I'm delighted they feel that way. McGonagall was really getting on a bit, so someone completely new. But if I ever do the encyclopedia, I'm promising I will give details.
You got to do that, aren't you?
I probably will. I'm not going to do it tomorrow because I'd really like a break. I will always write. I can't imagine stopping writing. I've literally been doing it since I was 5 years old. Always been writing, so I will still write until I can't write anymore.
Will you write about like Wizarding World, or will it be totally different?
I think I've kind of done the Wizarding World.
And so you can look out at these sweet, innocent faces and say, there'll never be another Harry Potter book.
I've done my Harry Potter.
Cool.
Well, thank you. That's awesome. And it's time to start calling people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see what a few people have to say.
Hi, Derek.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Awesome.
Well, how are you?
I'm fantastic. It's wonderful to hear your voices.
Well, it's wonderful to hear yours.
What did you think? What did you think about the book?
I thought it was fantastic. I loved it.
What was your favorite part?
My favorite part? The part that got me the most excited was at the battle at the end, when the house elves come crashing from the kitchen, led by Creature in the front.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
That was the best part.
Thanks for my master.
They did Hufflepuff proud.
Yes, they did.
They did Hufflepuff proud. Yeah, I saw that she had Professor Sprout behind the elves with a larger knife, making sure that they fought.
Throwing plants with Neville, right?
Yeah.
That was brilliant. Wasn't that awesome? I mean, kill it with greenery. Can it get any better? It was brilliant.
Grubbly Plank was helping, too, helping with the plants. She did great.
Yeah, I thought that was the coolest part. That was my favorite part. And the part that got me, I think that made me want to cry the most was when the part where Molly goes ape on Bellatrix.
Yeah.
Yes. That made you want to cry?
Yeah, I don't know what was it about. Just that gut reaction of, like, if that was your daughter, that's absolutely what you do. You just scream and run over to save her and... Yeah, I thought it was
it's
great.
Mother love. You don't mess with a mother. There's mother love all over the stuff.
Yeah, it was late at night, so maybe that's why I had such a reaction.
Yeah, you don't mess with Molly.
All right, well, listen, thank you, Derek.
Oh, thank you so much, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Have a good show. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Molly pwned. All the moms pwned. I mean, Narcissa. Oh, there's two moms, and they both rock.
Yeah,
amazing.
Narcissa, like all the moms. Even when you were evil, you were a good mom.
I know. How about that? Ooh.
You could tell mom wrote it.
Right.
All right.
Did Bellatrix ever have any kids?
No.
Oh,
God.
Really, really,
no kids. That'd be
really,
awful.
For the sake of the universe, hope not.
Hello?
Hey!
Hi, is this Jessica?
What's up, guys?
We're just chilling, talking about the book.
Yeah.
What did you think of the book?
I was in a bit of shock when I stopped reading that last page, but I loved it overall.
Why were you in shock?
Yeah, what surprised you?
Well, just that it was the whole thing was over and there's nothing left to read.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what surprised me most out of the whole book was what Draco named his kid.
Yeah.
Scorpius?
Yeah, seriously.
Jeez.
How do you name your kid Scorpius?
That threw me through a loop.
What was your favorite part?
God, there's a lot other than Molly Weasley's line, but I'm rereading it and there was one part where Creature hits Mundungus with the frying pan.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, yeah, Creature. What did you think of the Snape chapter?
I thought it was great. It was just a lot of different scenes, and it gave a lot of depth to Snape's character, which I thought was great. A lot of insight.
I was very interested to read that thing, too. It was hard. I don't know what you girls thought, but it felt like to me that it was kind of like interrupting everything. It's like a big break and everything to hear about Snape.
It seemed kind of an odd time to do it, but it had to be done.
Yeah, definitely. And it was very cool to read, but it's so funny because you wait all that time to hear about Snape, and then you hear about him right when you want to hear about what the heck else is going on.
All right, well, thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks.
Hello?
Hey, Nancy?
Yeah.
Welcome. You're on the line with Pottercast.
Oh. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Sue. Stop. Her name is Nancy, not Sue, John.
Nancy. Hi.
John thinks everybody's Nancy. Name is Sue now.
Sorry.
Hedwig. So how are you doing? Are you recovered from the weekend or what?
Oh, yeah. Major loss of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm already half asleep myself.
John. We're all sort of walking like through life in a daze right now, a post Deathly Hallows daze.
But it was worth it, right? You thought it was worth just staying plowing through it? Did you love the book?
Yeah, I liked the book a lot. But I thought the ending was a bit disappointing.
The epilogue or the ending?
Well, the epilogue.
Have you read the interviews that Joe said more about the characters since then?
Yeah.
Has that made it better for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody just wanted like a massive laundry list of who's where, who's doing what, you know. She wanted just like a roster, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard for anybody to be too upset now that we have an encyclopedia announced.
I know, it's awesome, isn't it? Very.
That's going to be friggin', the Crookshanks Patoot.
The Crookshanks Patoot. So have you reread any parts yet?
I'm actually in my 4th reread.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Wow, do you want to do the show for us? Now, on your 4th reread, were you angry at Dumbledore for ordering Hedwig to her death?
Not really.
Come on.
Oh, he didn't think about Hedwig.
Dumbledore is directly responsible for Hedwig and Mad-Eye Moody's death.
Oh, I don't blame Dumbledore for their deaths.
He knew some people would die. It's war.
I'm sure if Harry made the connection, he'd be mad at Dumbledore for Hedwig's death.
I think Harry has a lot more to be mad at Dumbledore about than Hedwig's death.
Hedwig was a very important lady.
You know, but Harry...
He delivered a lot of good mail.
Harry could also be mad at him for his own death, so, you know, or supposed death, or half-death, or death back to life.
Well, we never got to find out if Hedwig was an animagus.
Well, I've heard scuttlebutt that there is a movement happening that's maintaining that Hedwig is not dead.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I've even heard that HedwigIsNotDead.com has been bought.
I love it. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I want to join.
There's theories and everything. It's intense.
Wow.
That she was nibbling Harry's finger, so she had his magical blood in him.
Perfect.
So
she
wasn't really killed.
Well, I don't know why she had to explode. I mean, that's ridiculous.
She's already dead.
I know. It's like, let's make sure she's good and exploded.
This conversation makes me very sad.
Car. So
and then exploded.
Yeah.
She could have broken out.
I mean, when your bird is dead, you don't bombard it. It doesn't need to
or Bombarda Maxima it.
Bombarda Maxima bird body.
Hedwig.
Bombarda Birdia? I guess that would be. That would be kind of...
Bombard Birdia. Okay. Nancy, thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a great night.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Hello? Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice message system.
I'm going to leave her a message.
Oh, a voicemail. Fun.
Let's do it. Do it. Do it in.
It's not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you finish, hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a call back number, press 5.
Hello! I am the ghost of Hedwig! Don't be sad or report. I'm in a better place. Except when I exploded. That was pretty rude.
Oh, my God. John!
Bye. Don't listen to John. We're sorry we missed you for podcast. Hopefully next time. Bye.
That
was hysterically bizarre.
You're just a lunatic.
If I was Hedwig, I'd come back as a ghost. She had unfinished business.
Oh, my God.
What kind of unfinished business does Hedwig have?
She has all kinds of things. She didn't, you know, get her affairs in order. She had no time. Very
but
sad.
That's how war is. War is cruel, even to birds.
Yeah. War is cruel.
No, I mean,
even to birds. Exactly.
Speaking of those deaths, though, don't you think it was a little inconsiderate of Harry to not invite Winky to Dobby's funeral, or to consider that Dobby would have any friends that would want to attend the ceremony?
And might get killed on the way.
And sacrifice them? I don't think so. He would.
What do you
Dobby
mean? Sacrifice who?
Well, I meant by notifying them, they would be in peril. He was not going to put them in peril to come.
Are they
going to
send a little Patronus to Hogwarts that said, "Hey, Dobby's dead. Who wants to come over and hang out for a funeral?"
I don't know. Dobby was pretty persona non grata in the Hogwarts kitchen when we saw him last. They were all pretty annoyed.
Oh.
And Winky, if they had been an item, she would have known and understood, because that would have been a dangerous thing, that her man, Elf, had gone to save the day. You know?
Yeah, but, I
mean,
Creature probably
could have gone
and retrieved Winky.
Okay, we're losing time here. Let's focus on what's important, shall we? Hi, Jonna.
Hi, who's this?
This is Melissa with Jonathan.
Hi! Oh, hi! Hi, guys!
Hey, Potter people.
Potter people. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I just wanted to just make this little comment, which is a mystery from book one for me, which finally solved with book 7, mm-hmm. which is why didn't they give poor little Harry directions onto 9 3/4? And it was totally because Petunia had been there, and I guess they just figured, oh, she'll tell him. She's his aunt, but...
Oh, my God. Petunia had been there. That witch didn't tell him.
Yeah.
How did he get there?
I was like...
Oh, so mean.
She thought, like... Because that was always... I was like, why? Why didn't they do that for poor little guy?
Yeah.
Seriously.
But that would be, like...
Well, I think it's just Hagrid being...
Oh, yeah,
being
that's true.
Forgetful.
Definitely. That's a good point.
Plus, she's not very maternal, though. I mean, you know, to at least to Harry at that point. You know, maybe. I don't know.
I think John feels the same way. I really wanted some more from Petunia. From the
I
adult
know.
Petunia,
that was very disappointing. I didn't have a whole lot of Dursley closure, in specific with Petunia. Because I felt like when she was leaving, she had something to say. She was, like, at the tip of her tongue.
She had something to say, yeah. And there... It was left so wide open, and I really wanted to know. We got to see more about, like, her past, but I want to know, what happened? What happened with poor Daedalus Diggle? Having to deal with those three.
Yeah, it's real. Good point.
We should ask Joe for some deleted scenes.
deleted scenes. She should write them and stick them on.
Go back in 1 through 7 and do the deleted scenes.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, from different people's perspectives.
Just give us, like, 100 more pages per book.
So did you think that Harry and Dudley were actually going to be friends? Do you think later on they had, like, future contact? I kind
of
wonder about that.
Of course.
Yeah?
I don't know about that.
Harry, well, like, Dudley, like, grudgingly comes to the family gatherings, and Harry does the same. It's like that cousin that you don't really want to see, but you're sort of obligated to see, you know?
No, I bet he comes around.
But, you know, they, like, have at least have an agreement.
I think they're, I think they're cordial. I don't know if they're friends, like, hanging out. Hey, Dudders.
Right.
What you doing on
Friday? We're never
going to
be fast friends. Hey, Dudders, let's go catch a movie.
Yeah.
No, no. Okay, well, thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
How awesome would it be if Joe just did write those deleted scenes?
That would wrap the house down right there. You know, I heard Joe is actually interested in doing the screenplay for Deathly Hallows, the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and how unhappy she was with all the other movies.
Okay, we're having this conversation right now.
You know, I thought
not true, guys. Don't
listen. Was from the thing that we kind of figured out in this one from the Sorcerer's Stone was how Dumbledore becomes invisible without an invisibility cloak. It's just like the super powerful disillusionment charm, or what's it called? Is that what it is?
I guess it is a disillusionment charm. They're mentioned in this book.
But we didn't learn how he zipped around the castle and knew all that stuff, did we?
Well, even Crabbe and Goyle were able to do the charm on themselves enough to fool Harry and the guy. Because they were in front of the room of requirement under the disillusionment charm.
That's true. Yeah. Wow, good point. John, boy, you're smoking these days on picking up that stuff. Wow.
Are you rereading, John?
I haven't reread yet, but I'm about to.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been, like, rereading, like, favorite chapters. I haven't gone and just done a full thorough reread.
No, I don't have class tomorrow. I think I'm going to pick up the book, see what I can get through. Because I haven't really even read, for myself, chapter one, because we read that on the ride home, because we all couldn't wait, and we were all in separate cars, and... in our car, we read out loud chapter one, and I had to drive, and look at the darn road, so I still don't know what the heck's going on with that white peacock or whatever.
Yeah.
I kind of perked up at that. Is that like Malfoy's pet or something?
It's like the guard at the gate. It's a white, not a guard, but it's like when you go to the Malfoy Manor, you see a white peacock. It just is a show of their wealth and ostentatiousness.
I mean, why would they pick like a friendly little, you know, nice peacock. Well, I want to pick like a white.
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect for him. No,
perfect.
I mean, because Lucius Malfoy especially was a bragger to show off, you know, a man of refinement and taste or whatever, like, you know, Rolling Stone sang, the devil. But, you know, it fits him perfectly. I just thought it was like the perfect animal.
It's showing off without all the color and garishness that
was
he
was. Was the peacock ill-tempered?
No.
No. But it was just, you know, kind of, look at me. I'm a special kind of strutty kind of bird, kind of Death Eater kind of guy.
You know, Lucius wasn't really actually ill-tempered either.
Did it have any laser beams attached to it, Ted?
Okay, I'll call the next person.
What?
Yeah, that's when we call the next person, too.
Okay.
Hi, Alicia.
Hey.
Hi, how are you doing? Welcome to Pottercast.
Hi. Oh, my gosh.
So how are you doing? What do you want to talk about the book?
Oh, my gosh. How many things. I just listened to your last podcast, actually, the Post-Deathly Hallows one, which was actually some nice closure. I've been waiting to hear other people's reactions on it because no one around me read it as quickly as I did.
Yeah.
Nice, actually.
How long did it take you to read?
It was less than 24 hours. I did eventually fall asleep at like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, so did we. We couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we got it 2 hours later than New York, which was kind of a bummer. My sister was calling me and bragging me about getting it 2 hours earlier.
No, fair.
As long as she didn't read the last page to me, I'd be okay.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah, oh, I'd be.
That'd make me very grumpy.
Yeah, which I have to say, I can't thank you guys enough for really sticking to your spoiler policy.
Oh, yay.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. It's
there's a lot of hard work from a lot of hardworking moderators and all those people that did an awesome job this past week.
Seriously.
I mean, there were people who literally selflessly had themselves spoiled just so that they could be the person who's
probably
spoiled completely.
Really...
They're like the Aurors in the front line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
They're like the Tonks and the Lupins and the Fildes.
Gosh.
Tonks and Lupin, who I want to find out how they died.
Oh, how Ramus died?
How Tonks and Lupin died?
Yeah, that was just.
I think they were snogging and, like, they got AK'd while they weren't looking.
No.
They got AK'd mid-snog.
Well, that's the way to go, isn't it?
Isn't love supposed to defeat the evil, though?
I know. You'd think a good snog would reflect an AK, wouldn't it?
I would think so.
I know.
Okay, well.
Bunch of bullocks.
Anything you specifically want to talk about, Alicia?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I just have to say, well, two parts, actually. How awesome was Luna?
Oh, Luna's the best.
I didn't think I could more than I already did. But the fact that she and Ollivander had a relationship, that was just an unexpected twist that just made me laugh when I read that. When she was like, oh, I'll miss you, I was like, what? But it was so, it, like, made me so happy, you know? Just that they had that, and that he was like, you were such a comfort to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's such a little ray of sunshine, you know, she just, I love when she gets to the jail, when they get to the jail, and it's like plain as day, she's just like, oh, I didn't want you to be arrested.
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing, you know.
She has one of my favorite lines about the Karos when they get cursed, and she's like, oh, they're pleased.
Yeah, that's so hysterical.
All the Ravenclaws surrounding the Karo lady.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines, too. I love that. They're pleased.
Yeah, and I loved the part where she was able to, when Harry and Ron and Hermione, I can't remember why they were going there, but they couldn't fight off the Dementors, and it was her words of encouragement that were able to help them. When she was like, we're still here, we're still fighting, come on. I was just like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That was one of those moments that sent me into water.
Yeah, seriously.
Aww.
Seriously. Oh, and when she did the short eulogy at Dobby's grave.
Aww.
Oh, that was...
Oh, yes.
Like, I didn't think I could like her character anymore, but she was so awesome in this book. And I agree with you guys, what you were saying about the friend's picture on her wall.
Yes.
That was so cool.
Oh, you know, it's funny that we see her, like, probably 10 times more than we see Ginny.
Yep.
Seriously. But she's kind of more amusing.
She is, I would say. I would agree. But I feel bad for Bonnie Wright, who probably was all getting geared up for this big Ginny-centric storyline and Ginny going on the Horcrux hunt, and she's all like, wow, I'm hardly in here. This sucks.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, and I also had to say, I liked your discussions on your podcast about the Prince's Tale. And I thought it was just kind of interesting. Like, after I finished reading that chapter, I can't say that any of it particularly surprised me, except that Snape and Lily's friendship had gone back so far, which kind of startled me when I realized that in the fifth book, you know, once Petunia knows what the Dementors are, and she tells Vernon, I heard that awful boy telling her about them, I realized she's talking about Snape, and, you know, you'd always assumed it was James. That just kind of startled me when I realized that it was Snape, and that, you know, like, Petunia knew Snape.
Oh, I always thought it was Snape, though, actually. I kind of thought, maybe.
Yeah.
It was a popular theory for a while. It was a popular theory.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that awful boy.
But it was very cool to have it, for sure.
And I know people were suspecting that the Snape's worst memory was because of what he did to Lily, not because of what the Marauders were doing to him. But that just really struck me, too, then, that was right. I was like, holy cow, that really was why it was his worst memory. Because I kind of brushed off those theories. I didn't really think that there was a lot of validity in them. But there was.
A lot in this book reminded me of that theory that the easiest answer to any question is usually the correct one. And so when we're talking about, like, the big questions, a lot of fans really did find the easiest answer and get it right. But where things went crazy is when the new elements were to the... added to the story that you couldn't possibly guess at, you know?
Yeah.
But since we've spent 6 books with her characters, we sort of knew their emotions and knew what they were going to do, and the big stuff was pretty on target, which we were so unable to believe because we'd spent 6 books completely thrown off track by her, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
So where does it rank for you guys as far as the favorite? Like, is Half-Blood Prince, I thought, Melissa, you said a while ago that Half-Blood Prince was your favorite, like when you were in London.
It was.
Is it still?
This is bypassed. No, this is bypassed. There's no way that this can't be. I mean, look at that last third of that book. Oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah, this is far and away my favorite, too.
I have to thank you for your link to Cheryl's blog on the epilogue, because I had gotten so tired of reading derogatory comments about it. Because, I mean, yeah, like you said, it was kind of sappy, but I didn't think it deserved the backlash it was getting. At the same time, so I really liked her comments.
Don't you think that J.K. Rowling has earned a couple of sappy pages after 5,000 crazy ones?
Gosh, yes. I mean, why not? And I was kind of, I don't know, I mean, I'm not really a sappy person, but I was kind of glad, you know, I was just kind of glad to think, like, for my husband, what he said that it was just too hard for him because he said if it had come out, like, maybe 6 months after the book, he probably would have liked it more. And I said, man, well, yeah, but I'm glad I have it now at the same time. And did you read what she said? I was glad to know today when she was telling about what their professions were.
Yeah, me too.
Her closure.
Yeah.
That was kind of what I was hoping, so.
I find it really interesting that they sort of all grew up enough to realize that the way to affect the most change was actually to walk right into the beast, into the ministry, and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was so cool. And that, I mean, I liked that, that she said they completely revitalized it, and that Hermione was working there.
Yeah, but I like how it took some time, though, to do it. She said it takes them a couple years to do it. So I thought that's really cool that you wonder what they were doing and that kind of thing, you know. Just awesome.
And they made it a good world. You know, that's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, in the more mundane things that don't get books written about them way, that's another way to make the world better for people. And they still go on doing it because they're not enough of heroes, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah, I know. I liked all that, too. And I love what you guys have been putting on your side. It's been nice. It's so sad that it's over. But at the same time, I mean, I'm really happy that we know the ending at the same time. And so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Your side's been a comfort in the time of regretting it's over.
Well, it's not over. We got plenty more to go. It's just never going to reach this pitch again.
Yeah, I know. The encyclopedia.
Very cool.
It'll never be over. Melissa and I were talking last night about the possibility of us waiting at a midnight queue for the worldwide release of the Fantastic Beasts and Creatures and Where to Find Them, the movie, after we exhaust every other J.K. Rowling thing. Because we're trying to figure out, is there any way to make a movie from anything from the encyclopedia that she puts out?
The Quidditch one?
If you just, like, handpick, like, 5 or 6 stories out of it and just try to make, like, a movie, like it's a collection of little stories.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've yet to see an encyclopedia movie. Has there been any other kind of encyclopedia movie?
The history of Mel Brooks, History of the World. Does that count? Maybe not.
That's true. Okay.
I want to see it. All right, well, let's put into, like, a little miniseries and, like, take one character every episode. That'd be so fun. Because then we'd have like a 2-hour Dawlish special.
Oh, he got his butt kicked. Or Dawlish, or How I Got My Butt Kicked by a Lady in a Vulture Hat.
Now, come on. What would you have done if he would have kicked Neville's granny's butt? Would you have been like, oh, way to go, Dawlish, beating up an old lady? No, you'd be like, mortified. How dare you, Dawlish? Dawlish did the only sensible, gentlemanly thing.
Yeah, that was it, John. Uh-huh. He gentlemanly went into St. Mungo's.
It's pretty much a bunch of crap is what it is.
Okay, you are getting a little too excited right now.
So when did she say it was John Dawlish, just out of curiosity? I saw that post.
Yeah, she said that for the midnight release thing. Somebody asked her the question. Somebody asked her what Dawlish's first name was, because John from the Leaky Cauldron wanted to know.
That's so funny. Well, way to go. And good job on your theories, John, by the way.
I know.
They did pretty good.
I was like, no way.
I love that, like, even things like John always talking about how Expelliarmus is what Harry always does. And what do? They start talking about how everybody's recognizing Expelliarmus as Harry's signature move, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what saved the day, right? Isn't that? Yeah.
Yeah, and then John actually might have said on an earlier podcast, hey, what's Harry going to do? Walk up to Voldemort and go Expelliarmus? And it's exactly what he
pretty
did.
Pretty much.
So, Melissa, were you at all disappointed that Harry was a Horcrux? Because I know you've been...
The thing with the Harry the Horcrux thing is that I had firmly set myself against it because it meant to me that he had to die.
Mm-hmm.
So there was I was not going to believe in anything that meant that Harry had to die, because the whole idea of a Dementor finding which piece of soul to suck out of him was pretty ludicrous to me. So I was no, he absolutely will not be a Horcrux. There's no way. Despite all, like we said, the easiest answer was that he was a Horcrux.
Yeah.
So I just firmly, it was denial, you know? So I really, you know, I'm very happy to be wrong if it meant that he not only killed Voldemort but got to live.
Yeah. So. I still don't really like it. Just because it's not like he's not a real regular Horcrux. He's like this, you know, the soul was so weak that it was just breaking apart at the seams, and anybody in the room would have turned into a, quote, horcrux, because that's what this little piece latched onto. It's like,
right.
We have a whole huge book, horrific book, about how to make a horcrux, and none of its knowledge is even utilized, because it just happens kind of by accident.
Yeah, but you know what? Nobody in the wizarding world had ever heard of somebody making more than one horcrux. So at that point, to be going to your seventh, it's sort of understandable that the soul would become that unstable. The only thing that confuses me is that Dumbledore calls him a horcrux, but then we hear that living bodies are actually the opposites of horcruxes. So which is he? Is he an actual horcrux, or is it just like this weird anomaly that we're going to call a horcrux because it's easy?
I think that was exactly what I thought when I was reading it. Dumbledore just said it, he was a horcrux because it's just the easiest way to go by explaining it, because there's no history of anything like that. Because you're right.
Because the Horcrux is the container.
Is the opposite of the Horcrux.
Yeah, and didn't they...
The Horcrux is the container.
Didn't they say it was inadvisable to ever do it on a living thing? Like, didn't he say even the genie was kind of taking a chance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still don't get why he made Nagini a Horcrux. That was pretty dumb.
Well, it is dumb, because if you want something that's going to keep you alive forever, don't make something that cannot live forever something that you need to stay alive. You know what? That was a really dumb way to say it, but so a cup, sure, not a snake.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A cup has a very long life.
I really want to see the scene where Hermione stabs the Hufflepuff cup.
Awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool, actually. Maybe they do it in a backflash or something as Ron's explaining it.
Oh, it was nothing. I'm sure they took probably about 3 seconds, and then they just made out the rest of the time.
Yeah, it doesn't take that long to get out of the chamber, right?
They had a broom, so.
Some people have said, and I wanted your opinion on if she answered this or not, that she never answered who else was in Godric's Hollow the night that the Potters were killed. I thought it was sort of the bag shot. I thought that was what she was indicating, with the fact that she still was there.
That she answered it and that it had to be nobody. It had to be that nobody was in that house.
Wait, what? She answered this when?
In the books, it says that it had to be nobody, because otherwise that somebody else would have been a Voldemort.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, but I thought that she said for all the time that there was somebody else.
No, she just never answered the question.
Yeah, I thought she said there was someone else in Godric's Hollow, not necessarily in the house.
No, we asked her and she said no comment.
Oh, okay.
Tricky. Okay. Alicia, thank you so much.
Hey, yeah, I can't wait to hear the next Pottercast.
Cool. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Can I say something while we're still on this? A lot of people have been saying that someone said that they were disappointed about the epilogue, that I was disappointed, and I'd like to talk about that. Can I just say this? I was.
Yes, because how dare you not love every single drop of everything in every single book? How dare you? Sorry.
You know, I'm very happy. I mean, ultimately, obviously, I want Harry to have a family. That's very important to me. I make no secret about that. But I was just disappointed in the way that it was written. And I just think, personally, and I don't know this for a fact, that maybe Jo wrote this many years ago, and she's since progressed as a writer. So for me, it was a change in tone and way of writing, and I just, that's what let me down. It wasn't so much the content, although the names... The Scorpius name was a little freaky.
Scorpius,
you know.
Freaky.
And I wanted more detail. Like you said, maybe I am one of those people that wanted that laundry list of information, but I don't know. I know that makes me a bad person. But
it doesn't
just
make you a bad person. But respectfully, though, I'm going to disagree on the writing style, because I think it's just different than what we're used to. But I think that she might have wrote it a long time ago, but that she's probably edited it heavily since, you know.
I don't know. It just wasn't what I, maybe because I had this expectation in my head,
yeah.
That could be part of it, that it just didn't meet that, so maybe that's part of my, that influenced it. I don't know.
I'm not ready for something so free of conflict, you know?
That's true.
That's true. Too, because it felt like, for some reason, unexplainedly, that it was like stepping back into the past instead of the future. I think it's just because we haven't had something so free and easy, and so, you know, oh, yay, 9 3/4, Hogwarts, happy, happy. Like, since Sorcerer's Stone, and there was a lot of similar parallels, even in what was happening there, and, like, the conversations with the with the daughter Lily and Ginny and everything. And
yeah, it came full circle.
It felt like something out of Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, it did. I agree with you, John. It totally came full circle that it came, you know, this is the routine, but I don't know. It just, I don't know.
While we're talking about it, we linked this on podcast.com, but I want to bring it to some other people's attention. Hot Cheryl, who is one of the editors on Harry Potter and has been on this show before, who's making her rounds in the media. I don't know if you guys have noticed. She's been on, like Nightline, and now she's in Entertainment Weekly. It's like, yeah, go Cheryl.
She's had stuff. They must have heard her on our show and decided they wanted to get her on their show.
Totally. So she posted a bunch of thoughts on her blog, which is really, for anybody who's interested in writing or editing, a great blog to read. It's Chavelaque at blogspot.com, which is chavelaque.blogspot.com. And here's a couple of things that she says about the epilogue. The epilogue. It's not really receiving much love, I see. Some people hate it because it doesn't answer all their questions. Some people hate it because it gives answers they don't want. And some people just find it cheesy. I think it paid off five essential themes, and I'll try and do these short. Family. Harry, at the end, has a wife and children, a godson, many brothers-in-law, all their wives and children, and the acceptance of the full wizarding community, which is different than he had in the beginning. Number two is maturity. His son's name signifies that he's you know, come to terms with what Snape has done and given him this high compliment of naming a child after him. It shows us that Harry has grown up and become wise. Fame, we see that he's happily simply being a father, but that he's sort of, like, used to it and is okay with people gawking at him or whatever. Choice. He tells Albus that it is our choices far more than our abilities. He passes Dumbledore-like wisdom onto his child. And power, or where real happiness comes from. It's resolutely domestic. There's kids squabbling and dad's talking about parking. It's a scene straight out of typical middle-class family life plus wands. As far as we know from it, Harry is not powerful. He is not super important. He does not wield any significant power. He is just a dad who loves his family. This says Cheryl. I think maybe part of the reason why people dislike the epilogue so much. The chosen special one, the boy who lived, the one we've identified with all this time, has become just a regular guy, which means, by fictional standards especially, that frankly his life is a little boring. But J.K. Rowling is showing us clearly that he's finding happiness in everyday love and domestic life rather than big fantasy heroism. He is a Jane Austen and not a World of Warcraft hero in the end, and that is a kind of happy ending we can all aspire to. All was well.
Yeah, I like that last line, actually. And, you know, can I just say this? I don't want to. But when I had to write a thing about what I thought the last ending of the book, how it should end, and I had a little scenario when they were at the family gathering, only it was Hermione's, from Hermione's perspective, and it was like her and Ron were married and they had a baby, and there's all that kind of, so I'd agree with that. I love how Cheryl phrased that about that domestic is the greatest joy can be in your domestic, the simplest things like that. And that, wow, that was really nice. That's really cool.
I have an interesting point. It just occurred to me as you were reading that. It makes me wonder how personally offended Joe would be by people not enjoying the way that Harry decided to find his happiness, because it seems like that she's kind of writing herself into Harry a lot here. She's amassed, you know, as much as she has, you know, wealth-wise, and she's decided, you know, and rightly so, to raise her kids and, you know, just like any other family, and try to keep them grounded and try to, you know, raise them away from the fame and spotlight, just as Harry seems to be doing with his kids, and that they're finding happiness and, you know, the simple pleasures of just a regular everyday life and, you know, a loving family. And staying away from, you know, living in the limelight and living, you know, gratuitously and, you know, all high society with all this money and stuff and all this fame. So I see a lot of similarities between those two situations there, and it makes a little more sense to me as to why that was such an appealing way for Harry to turn out too.
It's how she's found her happiness too. Wealth and fame and power, and she's, you know, an article just recently mentioned that she has a minivan and she, you know, it's astounding. Awesome. It just shows somebody. Who was I talking about before the book came out about how the book would end? And the book would end with a reminder, because we were talking about Philip Pullman's books, and that the book ends with a resolute reminder of what his core life theory kind of is, you know, or it's a reflection at least of it. And we said, well, that should be the same way with J.K. Rowling. The book will end with a reminder of the central, like her central theory of life or whatever, and it does. It's that happiness is found in your family, and it's pretty amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of been the underlying theme about family. Harry has found his family at Hogwarts, and now he has his own real family. And I think that that's, you're right, that's lovely.
Yeah,
I'm not just
going
to, lovely. Totally lovely.
I mean, I would venture to say that I bet you if Harry were to be put in front of that mirror of Erised again, he would see the same reflection at this point.
Oh, isn't that nice? Maybe
yeah.
That's it would have been a nice, you know?
Yeah.
He'd see his whole family in there now.
Wouldn't that be cool? Oh, that's such a great picture to have in your head, you know? That just, that gave me chills.
Oh, I want
like that
fan art. Can I get that can somebody draw just Harry standing in front of the mirror of Erised just seeing himself? I think it would be so great.
Seriously, that would be great. I bet some of them, they could do that.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Be nice. Okay, let's go on to the next.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's bring some more peeps in.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
Hey.
Is this Pottercast?
It is.
Is this Grumbly Plank?
I've been listening to you guys for a long while, and actually, my friend John and I, who have a radio show, we were trying to get you guys on a radio show for our preview for Book 7. If you guys want to come on Sunday, we'd love to have you still. But
oh, I'm sorry that we haven't seen it, but yeah, sure, we'd love to if we have time.
When I got the book and, you know, I opened it up, I didn't even look at the dedication this time, which is weird for me because, you know, I've seen them all and I, you know, Aim Putin, Jane Keeley, the godmothers of Swing, but I looked at the frontispiece and I was shocked because of Aeschylus and the libation bearers. The frontispiece is the thing that comes before the, you know, the plot of the book. It's the cranes from other authors.
Uh-huh.
And the libation bearers was something that I studied this year. I'm an English major and I happen to have studied the three plays that Aeschylus wrote and Libation Bearers being the middle of them. And the quote itself is about the family who ruled the city and they had this cycle of bloodshed similar to the whole Elder Wand thing. And, you know, obviously I don't know what the Elder Wand is at this point, but basically the entire play is about ending it through justice. And that's basically what happens with Harry and Voldy at the end of the book. I was amazed to know that I'm like, oh my god, I can see what's going to happen already. So that was a cool moment
for
me.
Well, I hadn't studied either of those works, and I opened that page and we read those poems first, and I almost burst into hysterical tears because I was sure that it meant he was going to die, and she was ready for it. She was readying us for it, you know?
Yeah.
And we just kept going, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, they're about death, I don't like this.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm a little amused now knowing how upset Melissa was when she saw the first picture there of Hedwig and the wand and how that totally sold her about Harry dying and totally did not sell her as Hedwig dying.
No, it didn't.
Because
if you look at the picture, the front art on every other book, I mean, like, for 6, I think it was Dumbledore, and for 5, it was Padfoot going out of 12 Grimmauld plates. It's like a huge clue to the end. So I'm like, why is Harry's wand sitting there alone with Hedwig at the... What? What? You know?
Well, I thought it was a little obvious that they drew X's in Hedwig's eyes.
They did not.
I should have given it. They did in my book. Didn't they? Are you serious?
They maybe Bree did that to play a joke on you.
Oh, that's so mean.
With the art for this Harry Grand Pré, you know, she drew our attention with the sky, but, you know, the walls are opaque. None of us noticed. Oh, it's got to be the Great Hall. So
right.
That was pretty good on her part. No, I'm actually curious to... as to what you guys think is the basis for the names of Hugo and Rose. I mean, me being an English major, I thought, oh, Hugo's a Victor Hugo reference, and Rose is a Stephen King reference. He writes about the Rose of creation, but I have no idea and no basis for calling that fact.
I personally thought it was a testament to some children that have written her along the way. Jo does a lot of charity work, and I like to, I don't know, I'm just guessing, that I thought maybe she put those attributes to some of the sick children or something, or some child that's...
I thought I heard somewhere that her grandfather's name was Hugo.
Really?
Really?
No, actually, I know both of her grandfather's names, Stan and Ernie.
All right.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
So I don't think that's the case. But I just want to let you guys know you're doing a great job with the podcast. Keep it up until all the movies and the encyclopedia and everything else she ever does comes out.
Oh, my gosh, we'll be dead.
Yeah.
And I bawled when Doc died. I absolutely bawled.
Oh, me too. I mean, how can you not? I just,
It was gut-wrenching.
It really was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was brutal.
Email about our radio show. We're doing a wrap-up show on Sunday, and we'd love to have you guys call in, but I understand if you're too busy.
I'll give it a shot. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
That's so nice.
I had not read either of those plays, but now that I look at that, it didn't even occur to me to think more about that whole, what those plays were in those poems, the Libations Bearers that he was referring to.
Yeah.
I was just more gripped by the William Penn thing because I had read that one. So, wow. I have to go read those now.
Dude, I was distraught. You couldn't even look at me. Like, we were in the car. I'm like, no, no, no. And I turned the page. I'm like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I got pissed off at you because I'm like, God darn it, just read this book and stop trying to throw everybody off.
Oh, look who's talking.
Just read the book.
What are you up to? And I tell you what I'm up to. And he goes, I hate that witch. And I hadn't been anywhere near Rita Skeeter article yet. And
I was talking about somebody
leave
else.
Leave me alone. Okay.
I can I say I love the way Joe and her humor in this book and the way she wrote that Rita Skeeter article with some serious jabs at some people well known.
Oh my gosh.
And it was brilliant and I just was like,
oh, I couldn't stand that thing. I made me so mad.
It's such a perfect lampoon on profile pieces, puff pieces that
you see in every
newspaper. Oh, we go into her marvelously wooden paneled, elegant home and she offers me biscuits and isn't she a wonderful person? Like,
it was perfect.
We've read that story so many times. I've always tried not to.
How many people have done profiles about Joe like that?
Yes, absolutely, they have.
We just recently, they said she offers us muffins or something.
She's like a hermit, you know, like the people saying she's the recluse and all this, like, you know, nonsense, you know. And here we find out she's driving to the grocery store in a minivan. You know, I mean, it's just ludicrous. Those things, those articles, those books.
I'm totally going to move over there so I can just hang out at her grocery store and just chills all day and looking at groceries.
Good job.
You're
going to
lurk in the fresh food section, aren't you, John? Just going to kind of spring out.
I would work produce out there.
As long as you meet her wearing radishes on your ears, I'm okay.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Well, they're not radishes anymore.
Be like, Joe, do you want some melons today? Be like, here's some melons, Bria.
They're dirigible plums. They're not radishes now.
Yeah.
I know. Isn't that gross? Do you think they have, like, some kind of, like, everlasting ripeness spell on them or something
probably
so that earrings don't get gross?
Yeah, she's probably got them pretty charmed. I hope, anyway.
That's awesome.
Imagine, Luna showed up with her moldy earrings.
John, you should ask her that, one of your, in the chat questions. You should ask her that. Ask her about the produce spells that we're missing.
No, no, no. I only have one question for her. Is that why does Dollis need to be the punching bag for everybody in the book? Because that was so disheartening.
Aww.
Hello?
Patty, you're still awake.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome to Pottercast.
Pottercast! Yay!
God, I can't believe you just called me. Hooray!
How are you doing?
I'm brilliant.
In the middle of the night. We're so sorry, but hello.
Oh, well, true. God, I'm talking to God, believe this.
Well, tell us what you want to talk about.
You've won 100 chocolate frogs.
Woo! Oh, how do you feel about being canon, John?
What?
Yes, he's canon.
How does John feel about being canon?
I have a canon card now. It's laminated. I keep it in my wallet. I get free pizza every other Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
So what did you think of the book?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I was really pleased. I was broke up with living in Tongside, but the end of it was the end. You know, it was how it was supposed to end. Harry, you know, going off happily into the sunset kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you like the family thing? Yeah, I liked him having a family, though. I mean, I didn't like the writing of the chapter, but I loved that he had a family. And
was all that. Plus, she's promised an encyclopedia. We're going to get all the details that we really wanted anyway, so...
How big do you think that's going to be? How big of a thing can she write? I hope it's not as small as, like, the Fantastic Beasts and Creatures or something. I hope it's at least as big as Order of the Phoenix.
She could easily write twice that.
Yeah,
and we'll be fine with
that. I know. She should just publish her notebooks in their present form.
Did you not ask her about that, Melissa? Back at the Half-Blood Prince release.
What, if after book 7 we could just rifle through all her stuff?
No, just about her maybe publishing the notebooks or something. No?
We just asked her how many boxes of backstory it was at this point, and she just said that she even had no idea how much it was. So,
oh, God.
Yeah. I really, oh gosh, I want to go over every single choice she made. I just want to, Oh, God, don't even get me thinking about...
What do you think Dean Thomas's story is? She said Dean Thomas had this big old story.
Have you never read her website, John?
Yeah, it's on her website.
I know it's on her website, but it's like... I'm like, how much more is it that we can hear about Dean Thomas?
Well, my question is, if there's that much about Dean Thomas, imagine how much she has in general.
You're right.
Yeah. I heard that Dean Thomas had an uncle who opened a bunch of fast food chains in America with hamburgers,
mm-hmm.
and traveled the country, yeah. So selling his old-fashioned hamburgers.
Thanks, John. It's not the Wendy's guy, okay?
No.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
Sorry, speaking of fast food, I went to America back in March, went to New York, loved the place. John, Chipotle rocks.
Oh, darn right it does. Darn right it does.
Since Pottercast started, I heard about you banging on about Chipotle saying, oh, it's brilliant, it's brilliant. As soon as I got to America, I found out there was a Chipotle right down the street. So I went right down the street and had Chipotle.
Oh, we're sorry.
Well, now answer me this, though. Now, I have to return the favor, so next time I travel to Ireland, where should I go eat?
Well, personally, I work in restaurants in Dundalk called Winter. I'm a chef there, and I would recommend that highly to any person.
No.
Oh, boo. We gotta call him back. I don't know.
That's great. I want to hear the name of his restaurant again. I love his voice.
I think he hit the button.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know. What the heck? Hold on.
We're talking food. This is Pottercast specialty. We like to talk food.
For real.
Get him back.
How close is Ireland to Scotland?
It's not that far, actually.
Skype credit, and I just bought Skype credit, but it hasn't hit yet.
Oh, no.
This is problematic.
How am I on the phone?
I have no idea. I think it was Ireland.
Oh,
it's the U.S. Oh, we're going to have to say goodbye to our Irish friends for the moment.
We love you.
Oh,
thank you.
Ireland,
it's lovely talking
money.
To you.
Send it to us in email. I can buy Skype credit, but it's going to take a long projection.
We need to know where to eat.
It's going to be a long projection thing.
Isn't it just like a little swim to get from Scotland from Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that far. I would love to go. I mean, Scotland and Ireland.
We need to take a little trip, you guys.
Yeah. Well, I think we should do it.
I think it's time for a podcast road trip. We haven't done one in a while.
Yeah, seriously.
Like 4 days? 3 days?
Yeah, 4 days.
Yeah.
Hello?
Is this Chris?
Hey!
Yes?
It's time for Pottercast!
Oh, hello! How's it going?
It's going great!
That's wonderful.
We got John and Melissa, Sue, and Grubbly Plank here.
Squee!
Ready to take your question?
You sent us a couple of good questions, so go ahead, go barrel down them.
Okay, my first question was, how do you think Dumbledore got the Elder Wand from Grindelwald, if Grindelwald's wand was supposed to be unbeatable?
Mm-hmm. Here's the question.
How does anybody get the Elder Wand if it's unbeatable? That's what confused me.
Apparently they have to sneak up on him and say Expelliarmus.
Well, what I think is that the Elder Wand is not actually unbeatable. Is that it's attracted to power and will go to the person who has the power, but it's not, I mean, that was a myth. There's no unbeatable wand.
Well, it's like... I think it's more powerful than any other wand if you just put it up spell versus spell. But it's probably, you know, it's just as possible to disarm somebody with it.
Right.
If they're not attempting to block it, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Didn't Rita say something like, is it possible that Grindelwald just raised a little white handkerchief that he conjured or something? Like, you know, it's like surrendering pretty much. Because that would be a way to beat him if he surrenders.
Plus, didn't Rita say, she called into question how great their duel was.
Right.
Grindelwald, maybe there was remorse in Grindelwald and he just kind of gave up.
Well, it really was a duel of power, I think. I think, like Dumbledore said, I beat him.
Well, Grindelwald was afraid of Dumbledore as far as power was concerned because Dumbledore was more powerful than Grindelwald. A lot more powerful. The only thing Dumbledore was afraid of was hearing the result of who was responsible for his sister's death. He wasn't afraid of Grindelwald's power by any means. He was only afraid of finding that out, and Grindelwald knew that. Grindelwald was quite afraid of Dumbledore, I would imagine.
That was just one thing that kind of stuck out at me. Like, maybe she kind of glossed over that now Dumbledore has the Elder Wand, where...
Yeah.
Impossible to beat someone, is it?
Well, I mean, the guy who originally had the Elder Wand from the story, I mean, gets killed just, you know, if somebody stabs him in the back, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and that was another question. How did, are we to believe that Grindelwald stole the wand from Grigorovich, and is that necessarily beating him for the wand?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know how you define beating, I guess. It's,
right.
I mean,
well,
stealing it?
Well, Harry gets the Elder Wand by stealing it from, he gets the allegiance of the Elder Wand by stealing Draco's wand, by overpowering Draco.
Right.
Yeah. Why doesn't Voldemort get the allegiance from stealing it?
From Dumbledore's.
From, yeah.
Because Dumbledore wasn't in possession of it at that time. Draco was.
Yeah, that's right, because Draco had the wand at that point.
But see, here's my question about it. So how long did Dumbledore have that wand?
Long time. Since Grindelwald up until the
since 45?
So, why didn't he just completely obliterate Voldemort in the battle in the Ministry of Magic, if he had that wand? And yet, Voldemort was able to, like, match him.
Well, I think it's just that Voldemort was so powerful that even with the power of the Elder Wand, they were matched. Because it's not an unbeatable wand.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's not like he can kill Voldemort. Only Harry can do that.
Right.
By destroying all the Voldemort.
Yeah.
True. He couldn't even do it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you, dude.
That's a good
no problem.
Question.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
See, the Elder Wand and the other Hollows are coming up under the same kind of heat the Horcruxes came under around book six time. Is why are we introducing something so huge?
Yeah.
Something we have never heard anything at all about before. So late in the game.
But, you know, and that's a book. You can't have this book and not have a new mystery. You have to.
Well.
There's a new mystery in every book. It would be really boring if it was just old stuff.
Well.
I don't think this book would be boring without the Hollows in it.
Yeah, I'd agree with John. I think that.
There's so much.
You could have gone either way with it.
No, I think you needed the Hollows. You needed the Hollows, and again, I'm going to quote Cheryl, because she just keeps saying things that make perfect sense and just sort of jive.
Well, Cheryl made a good sense about it, too.
He needs to be presented, he needs to overcome power. He needs to be presented with the choice between power and giving it up. And you can't do that without objects like the Hollows. You know?
But wouldn't the Horcruxes themselves, couldn't they have been a subject and presented an element of temptation to him?
No, because that's not attaining power, that's attaining immortality. He had the chance to overcome death and gave it up for, as Cheryl says, normalcy in a sandwich. And, you know, and it's different than defeating, Harry would have never been tempted to do the Horcruxes because that's murder. You have to commit murder. You have to be evil. He had a way to gain power over everything in the world, and he gave it up, and he wouldn't have had to commit murder in order to get it.
I don't know. I guess I didn't see the need to enter in the need to conquer power, the temptation of power as well as the temptation of immortality. I just thought that his task was enough, but, I mean, it worked, but it just...
Well, I see the difference, and I mean, there's probably... There probably could have been other... There's endless creative ways you could present Harry with power. I mean, you could have made him, you know, the heir of Gryffindor or something. You could have done all kinds of things with those objects and stuff, but... It was interesting to read about the myth of the three brothers and all that. And
I sort of like that it goes back as mythic, and it also makes Harry's ancestry important, you know, because there's an old quote from hers where she talks about his ancestry, which is why when the era of Gryffindor theory got shot down, everybody was like, what? No way, you know? But, I mean, it had to be something that Voldemort was also chasing because now he had the choice. He had the choice to not run into a situation half-cocked like Hermione's always yelling at him for doing. He had a choice to reject power. Which would he choose? Hallows or Horcruxes? Hallows or Horcruxes? And remember that he chooses not to act, and he's terrified by it, but it ends up being his salvation. It just shows maturity.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, one thing I liked about those Hallows, can I just say this totally obscure thing, but I like that she had how they related it to the Muggle mythology and children mythology in it too. And it kind of, I like that parallel. So she was kind of saying to the reader, see, look, there's mythology. Everybody still has it, you know, even though my books are, you know, there's so much criticisms about my books, about all these different, you know, she talked about Star Wars and obviously Lord of the Rings and all these different kind of things. I just thought that was kind of like a nice little subtle touch. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, he gets it all. He's probably the only person who could have wielded the Hallows, because he gets it all. Everything that they represent and everything that he, all the themes of love and death and whatever in his world, he gets. And so only because he gets them and he's presented with this opportunity to wield them and turns it away, and he's the only person in the world who turns it away, even Dumbledore, makes him like the overarching hero. And I just sort of loved that it wasn't that we read about Dumbledore's big defeat of a dark wizard and now we have Harry's big defeat of a dark wizard, that in the end they were all parts and halves and pieces of the same fight, and that makes Harry the hero, period, not just another hero.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which I just made me very happy.
That's a really good point. That's a good point. That's a good way to look at it.
Hello?
Hey, Mr. Kern.
Yes.
It's Melissa, John, and Sue.
From Pottercast.
Oh, it's Pottercast.
For those who don't know, Mr. Edmund Kern is the author of several books about Harry Potter. He's one of the first people we ever interviewed on Leaky, so it's got a special place in my heart. And you sent us a great email about what we were just talking about, which is the Deathly Hallows and whether they're a sideshow or an important part of the plot.
Yeah, I think that, at first glance, the Deathly Hallows seem to be sort of an extraneous plot development. Like, why is, Dumbledore raising this whole issue with Hermione by putting the symbol in the book that he gives to her? But I think if you think about it a little bit, they really are integral to the plot, because I think that they represent three different temptations Harry has to overcome, ultimately to sort of finalize what I think is Dumbledore's plan, as it's elaborated in the book. Harry has to stop fleeing from death. And if you think about it, the first two-thirds of the book or so, Harry is in hiding. And then finally, after they break into Gringotts, we encounter a chapter that's called The Last Hiding Place. You know, and after that, Harry is out there in the open, sort of engaging Voldemort. And I think that, he has to sort of master that temptation to remain in hiding, so to speak. Also, if we think about the Resurrection Stone a little bit, I think that it represents to a great deal Harry's past, and particularly the longing for his parents, for Sirius, and his family generally. And for me, that carries certain resonances with something that we encounter in the first book, Before the Mirror of Erised, where Dumbledore tells Harry that he has to not to dwell on dreams, but rather he can't dwell on dreams forgetting to live. And in essence, I think that Harry once again has to give up sort of hope, if you will, of once again encountering his family or any of the people that he's lost. And then finally, I think that the Elder Wand represents to some degree a desire on Harry's part to use power or direct force against Voldemort. And if the final battle between Harry and Voldemort is going to succeed, Harry has to willingly embrace death. In other words, he has to accept sacrificing himself rather than using power or force against Voldemort. And so I think that the quest, so to speak, represented by the Deathly Hallows is something that Harry has to accomplish in order to willingly sacrifice himself and get rid of that last bit of Voldemort that attached itself to Harry during that the awful night at Godric's Hollow so many years ago. And so I think that, in many respects, the Deathly Hallows represent this quest that Harry has to go through. Interestingly enough, however, Harry has to become the master of death, so to speak, before he can obtain each of the objects. I mean, granted, he already has the invisibility cloak, but once he has mastered death and moves freely to embrace it as an equal, so to speak, at that point he can use the snitch that Dumbledore has given him, open it up, and use the Resurrection Stone to summon Lupin, Sirius, and his mom and dad in a kind of, as moral support, so to speak, for this last task that he has to engage in. And then ultimately, as we learn in the final battle, the Elder Wand has already, in fact, taken Harry as its master. And so Harry succeeds in his quest by freely embracing death, meeting it as an equal, so to speak, and then at that point, the Deathly Hallows come to serve him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about what happened with the stone. He cast it aside right before he's about to die, so he's totally given over the idea. You know, he's given up his fear of death. He stands in front of Voldemort and takes off the cloak right before the end. He gets the Elder Wand and then casts it aside. You know,
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, and of course, you know, Dumbledore's great sin, so to speak, both as a young man and then also in Harry's sixth year when he's tempted by the ring, so to speak, that he finds, the Horcrux, which he ultimately destroys. Dumbledore's great sin is to think that obtaining these objects will make you the master of death. But in fact, I think that, you know, mastering death makes you worthy of possessing these objects, so to speak.
You know, it's wonderful to listen to you speak, because when I was reading this, I was just struck by how overtly religious that this chapter and this element was, much more so than, you know, and I thought, wow, Joe is really just not holding back at all in this book. Were you surprised to see something so, almost so open about it?
I was a little bit surprised. I mean, I think that she's been making the books more spiritual, if not exactly religious, for the past two or three volumes. So I was surprised, particularly by the pronounced Christ imagery that's present.
Yes.
On the other hand, you know, sacrificial love has been a theme right from the get-go. I mean, you know, that's what Lily did. And, you know, Harry has been told again and again that it was precisely her sacrifice that provided him with protection. Interestingly, though, I think that, you know, the spirituality in many respects remains imminent. You know, now what do I mean by that? I mean that there's no transcendent power that comes and intervenes and sort of secures victory for Harry. It's rather a kind of spiritual power that he finds within himself.
Yeah.
And that chapter is wonderfully ambivalent. You know, it's heaven, but it's not heaven. It's in Harry's head, but it's something real, you know, and Dumbledore even says that at the very end, you know, of course it's in your head, but that doesn't mean that it's not something real as well. That chapter as well struck me as very consistent with the accounts that people have given of near-death experiences.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of resonance as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So have you guys been going crazy for the past few days?
Months.
Pretty much.
We've all turned into walking zombies. We're all falling asleep as we're out with friends and family. It's been interesting. So how about you? Is it hitting you that it's done?
Yeah, I just, you know, I've been sort of swinging back and forth between euphoria, because now, you know, many of the questions have been answered, and a kind of sadness that it's over. But I'm really pleased to see the excitement continuing, you know, not only within fandom, but within casual readers as well. Almost everybody that I'm running into has their own particular take on the book, and they're interested in my views, and it's been an awful lot of fun just talking about things with everybody.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you so much for giving us all that insight, and we hope that you have an awesome day. And will we see you at Prophecy?
No, I unfortunately couldn't make it to Prophecy, but I hope to be at some of the conferences over the coming months.
Great.
Probably next summer, I think, is the next one.
Yeah, totally. There's Portus and Terminus and a bunch of things.
Right.
Cool.
Zolish
2008. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Bye.
All right, it's the end of the first call-out show from Post Deathly Hallows.
Wow.
Aww.
I don't even know what to say. There's so much information. We have so many people have great,
I know,
and your head just sits there and you think,
I miss you guys, too. I miss being able to do this in person. We've done it so many times now.
There's something missing in my life. I'm walking around and I don't see John, Sue, or Bree around. It's really weird.
It is.
I know. I miss everybody.
I miss you guys. We're going to see each other at Prophecy real soon.
Right.
Don't forget.
Yes, we will. Another big live Leaky Mug at Prophecy.
And do not forget to get your ticket for the Fans of Fandom. Was it? No. Fans of Fandom was famous, right? Shoot. For the... Sue, what's the name of it?
I don't know.
The
That's
Fandom
question.
Fandom Keynote
Fandom
thing. Sue's in it.
Yes.
Go get your ticket.
Thing.
that I'm doing.
We're going to cheer for her from the front row. It's going to be so much fun. And so not fun for people who aren't Sue, because we're just going to make crazy, crazy noise for her.
And I have to talk about fandom. I'm going to not look at you guys when I'm talking about Pottercast.
Great.
Yeah.
Should we worry, Sue?
I'm going to be heckling, so.
Oh, God. This is what scares me. And if I see any dollish signs, I'm going to crack up.
Hey, let's talk for a couple seconds about what we're going to be doing here on Pottercast now that DH is released.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, after Prophecy comes, we're going to get back to a real regularly scheduled Pottercast, and you're going to have your old favorite segments, your fan interviews, and Scrippy Fives, of course, will continue.
Mm-hmm.
Conundrums, like we mentioned a while ago, will kind of transform into a bit of a canon conclusion type segment, and it'll probably start out for a while attacking a little bit of the book at a time. Not so much like chapter by chapter as much as bit by bit, because you guys know these chapters are way too big just to put into one show. So,
yeah, right.
So we'll predetermine a section that we're going to talk
about.
That's
probably where we'll start. Probably as good as a place to start as the beginning anyway. So.
Well, we'll come up with some sort of schedule of what we're going to be talking about, which show, and put it on podcast.com so that you can be ready.
Yeah, definitely, because it'd be great if we were able to tell you what we're going to be talking about ahead of time to send in some opinions about it so we can put them in a show.
Yeah, and we have...
It's always fun.
It's ridiculous how much we have to do here, so plenty, plenty, plenty of podcasts to come.
Wow.
Plenty to go.
How are we going to talk about it all? There's so much to talk about. Holy cow.
Yeah. Well, so this is like starting over. When we first started the show, Half-Blood Prince had just come out, right?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man, it's been 2 years since then. Wow.
A whole new era. Hey, our 100th show went by, and we just didn't talk about it at all.
No.
What's that?
Our 100th show went by, and we didn't even talk about it.
Our 100th show. I think it said Joe went by. I'm like, where? I didn't see her.
She's in Florida, John.
Oh. Oh, the birds have feathers.
I was really touched that a lot of you guys remembered. I saw on our forum and stuff. You said, hey, it's Podcast 100 stuff.
Yeah.
That was really sweet. Thank you.
Can we say, too, how much we appreciate everyone who has been so nice to come out and see us while we were out and about? We should really thank everyone who's been
And for all the...
And Borders.
All the fun presents and cookies and candy.
And Borders.
Borders rocks.
And
rocks,
Borders, of course, for making it all possible.
Borders was awesome to us. Everywhere we went, they were just great. Thank you guys so much, and thank you for all. Yeah,
yes.
Just what you said. Okay,
oh,
guys, is it time to push out of here?
Just go. You're wasting time.
All right, well, I'm gonna go try and sleep and read some more. Wow, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So next time, guys, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Dobby.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night.
We've missed it.
Dobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
Well, how are you guys feeling now that all our touring is done?
I'm running the hell down. I'm coughing my headwigs off.
How does one cough his headwigs off?
The coughs come out like in small explosions.
Oh, John. You know what? I hope the Owl Society of America comes after you for, like, bringing up the saddest, most tragic thing to legions of fans of Owl fans everywhere.
It is very sad. I'm very sad for the girl Owl who plays Hedwig in the movies. I hope she doesn't have to do an explosion.
Oh, I think they'll have, like,
I hope they can do some kind of CGI for that. What if that was my job? What if I get hired to do the Hedwig explosion?
You should be.
You deserve it
that
now.
That would be perfect thing
right,
for you
right
to do.
Right, Sue? He deserves it?
He does. Completely.
Could you imagine? I would want on the credits to be like, Hedwig explosion.
Mass
effect.
Mass
John,
Hedwig murder.
John Dolish, no way.